Amanda.
Thank you.
My name is Zotwa. I'm from South Africa, in Soweto, the area called Dube. Yeah, I'm a member of Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. I'm affiliated to APF, Anti-Privatization Forum. We've got OKM, which is a front. When we decided to contest for the election, we formed a front that is OKM, Operation Kanyisa Movement. You'll hear a lot about this.
And the future.
Can you just speak up a little bit?
Oh, Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, Anti-Privatization Forum, which is affiliate. Then we form a political party, the front of the Anti-Privatization Forum. Front we form it because we wanted to speak inside the chamber. We've been speaking outside, no one will listen to us. Okay? Then I'll say more about this Operation Kanyisa in my speech. Finally, after apartheid, we fought, we win, the black men get freedom. For that we fight for, the ANC get the power. Mandela was a still respected man. Many people they were respecting him as a person that that he fought for the apartheid. People forgot that it's not Mandela that fought. The people who were left in the country. School children, parents, and others. In 1976, there was a massacre whereby many people died. Some are crippled today, don't have hands, arm, legs, eye. Yeah, I can say it. Fine. After the negotiation, then Mandela take over. He introduced the gear. He said, this gear will improve the economy of the country. Then there was a privatization, which today we are fighting for this privatization. Things have changed in South Africa. No doubt, but the change, the condition went very worse. The living condition was terrible. In Cliptown, where the Freedom Chart was drafted. Today I'm talking the Cliptown, they built nice monument that is calling Walter Sisulu Square. It's a nice building which there's a four-star hotel, restaurant, nice event center, beautiful toilets. You know, when you walk there, you feel, yeah, I'm in Santin away. But the sad part behind the building, there's a lot of shakes. Old houses, which when the Freedom Chart was adopted, the house was there. The house now is falling apart. It's in, you know, it's a house that you can look at it, you take a truck and say, this is a scrapyard, I'm just put it to the scrapyard. But it's a house where people live in. You can stand there for 10 minutes, you'll see women and children come out from that fallen houses. The house can fall at any time. I don't know what picture that we got from the nice building, and the behind there there's a terrible a place where people stay. In that monument, people who live in that shacks, they can't get jobs. They wanted to use that nice toilet. They don't have an access of using those toilets. Believe me, people who live there are not working and unemployment. There's no drainage. There's no proper toilets. You know, when you walk, it smell, you know, it's sad. It's sad, people. It's smell. It's like a pigsty. Now, recently, I went there to do some people inspection. We get into house to house. We are doing door to door. When the rain start raining, the people of the place, they get worried because women and the children must stay with the bucket to check where's the water. And all the time they take out the water. And if there's a rain, they stand because they can't sleep. It's sad. As we said, in South Africa, we've got a freedom. There is no freedom, guys. Children, when children are supposed to go to school, there's no uniform. Sometimes there's no shoes. You know, the condition in Kliptown, I'm talking about where the Freedom Charter was drafted, good people. When I'm talking, my heart is pumping because the condition which people are living there is not nice. In Soweto, where I live, people are still living in a harsh condition. The government forcing people to install the prepaid meter. If you refuse, you get arrested because you must take this prepaid meter, you like it or not. And before they install this prepaid meter, at least you're supposed to come and consult, but they don't do that. We still have a shortage of houses in Soweto. People still live in the shacks. If they build a house, they use very weak material. After a month, when you go to a new house, you just touch the wall, you find the cement just fall. You can't even paint that house. It's so terrible. The freedom that they said we had. As we say, the struggles continue. Unemployment rate, it's so high. Young people, they've got diplomas, they've got degree. We can name them, but they can't get a job. Many people lose their jobs. Retrenchment happens all the times. The people who had a job, they apply for the loan to the bank to get better houses. You know, if you've got a loan, then when you say ask the bank to build you a house, is that one you said it's a better house? But after some times, when the person gets retrenched, what's happened? He lose that house. He evicted from that house. The bank send the sheriff to evict that person. Another thing that's happening in the new South Africa, as we said, the struggle continues. So we, as a Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, we just decided that we can't stand this. The government that we had a hope, the government we thought that will give the better life, as you said, the better life for all. In 2002, there was no better life for all. It was a better life for few. If you are next to the government or you are the member of the parliament, you are the one who gets the better. But if you are an ordinary person, there's nothing comes to you. It started with electricity, the cut off our electricity. It's go on until we see 200 houses a day. Eskom come and cut electricity, and we said enough, it's enough. We cannot stand that. Before, the very same ruling party thought us, if you can't afford, you have to stand up and fight for your right. So it's our time now, as the Constitution said, you've got a right to fight our rights. You stood up, then you stopped Eskom. How did you stop Eskom? When Eskom comes to our yard and cut the electricity, obvious. Anyway, some of us, our men and women, they work at the Eskom, they know how to connect the electricity. We reconnect our electricity back. Mm-hmm. It's where we started. We fought that war of electricity, and we finally we win. In many ways, because now when we reconnected, then come up with another idea of installing the prepaid meter of the electricity. We also reconnect that a prepaid meter of the electricity. As we said, we've got experts that they can't get jobs at Eskom if maybe they're supposed to get jobs, or we've got people who've got skills. We reconnect it and you put your electricity back. Okay, some will say, but you take my box. How am I going to get electricity? We know where's the power. We connected to the power and we put circuit breaker, the person that can control the electricity, make sure that there's no danger to the person. We make sure you never leave the house without insurance. We make sure that you've got the circuit breaker that the person can connect it and switch it on and off. Then the Eskom, after we disconnect it, we take the boxes back to Eskom. One, we put some boxes to police station. The other pile, we take it to council's house or offices. The other pile, the last pile, we take it back to Eskom. All these piles, we give the police the memorandum that must sign it, that we bring the nonsense, rubbish, whatever. We don't need it. And then you take it back to a council office or council's house. Take your stuff. We don't need it. We take it back to Eskom. When you get to Eskom, you don't give them a chance. We just throw them. What you do. Yes. We won that. Then come up with something else, because you think, oh no, now where am I going to get money? Because the purpose is to make profit, people. The purpose of putting this install into this prepaid meter is to make profit. The purpose of switch off the lights for us is to make profit, because you must go and pay before you get your lights. So we are not working, we are unemployed, so we need electricity. You mean you cannot have a house without any electricity? Then you think of another trick. You bring the prepaid water meter. Same. the prepaid water meter. If a person, because there's an agreement, you sign the petition or sign whatever when you come to your house, then if you sign, because sometimes they target in old people who can't understand, you know, and you find out at your house there's a prepaid meter and they install it and without your knowledge. But as a Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, we've got offices, and here offices, we divided the offices, we've got advice office, where the people comes to the office and report all the problems that's happening in a township. What we do, we advise the person, and after that you go with that person, we reconnect the prepaid meter, and we give the person a free water. That's it. We take that prepaid, the same process with the Eskom, and back to the Joburg water. That's what we do. With the house, as we said, the struggle continues. With the house, when they evicted you, the sheriffs come, they take your stuff outside, your old drops and whatsoever. Then we come as the organization, we take it back, take you back inside, open the door, and take your stuff and say, to relax with your children. Then that's just it. It's how we fight our struggle in South Africa. We know this is not an end of electricity, housing, even the school. If maybe a child hasn't got a uniform, they had this tendency of chasing the child. We don't have a uniform, so we can't be in a class. But with us, we take the child back to school. We said the importance is not a jersey. It's for you to get an education. It's for your future. So we just do that. Even the school fees, because if you don't have a money for school fees, they have that tendency to chase the child. Then you take the child back to school. You say, principal, you've got no right. You let this child to be in a classroom. At the end of the year, she must get a report. Because sometimes if they just leave for the year, when you go and collect your report and say, no, you didn't pay, give you don't get your reports. So we stop that as a Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. Yeah. Then with that, the government doesn't know what to do with us. But yeah. But now we decided to say, okay, we're toying demonstration, you know, surrounding all the government buildings. This is enough. They just look at us at the window. Ah, the red T-shirt. I leave them. Okay. So we decided now to contest in the election of 2006. We get one seat. It was great. In chamber, in council, in a council chamber, meaning that local government, we've got one seat, which was very great. We speak inside now. We tell them whatever you want to tell them, boldly, strongly. If we said you not go to pay the rent, you don't write a letter. You just tell the crowd, the mayor, the madam speaker, direct, which is a good thing with us. Okay, in 2006 we elected. We've got one councillor that was female councillor. What she did, we had a pledge to sign, which is a good thing. Sign the pledge that I, Rebecca Musimuni, blah 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 blah, I signed this pledge. 100% of my salary go to my organization. Yes, sign that. But that was not enough, because you know when you're a human being, you sleep and change. Tomorrow you are no. I made a mistake. So we get an advice to the lawyers and give us the contract. Then we made her to sign a contract. But now she was clever enough. She didn't want to sign the contract. Okay. Then we thought, you know, we say, no, this is not a real comrade, you know. after, and then that was a time of floor crossing, you know. So her intention was to cross the floor to the bourgeois party where there's no salary goes to the organization. I mean, we are the socialist guys. We need to share. But she didn't want to do that. She wanted to get all the salaries for herself. But she stopped that, luckily, because we've got people like Wane here. He's brilliant, you know. He never did that. By the time he goes there, we took our chair and he goes alone there. Then we still have our chair. The chair, the person who's sitting on that chair is Zodwa Madiba, calling OKM. The OKM, which is in the chamber. As I told you that, I said to Madam Speaker, we as an OKM, we are not going to pay the rent. We as an OKM, we are not going to pay electricity. We, OKM, we are not going to afford to buy to pay rates and taxes, which they are introducing now. We, OKM, will not agree with the increase of the councillor because they're not doing anything. They're not deliver. I mean, people are still suffering on the ground. So we say that pansy, with that pansy, meaning down with the increase, down. Yeah, it's what I'm saying in a chamber meeting. I'm standing very strong because when I go there, my comrades surrounded me. They sit there on the top and listen, which is a good thing. With that, thank you.
Amanda!
Away too!
Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks, Comrade Chair, Comrade Zodwa. I think she kind of gave you a picture of what's going on the ground and how ordinary people are affected and how they live in the post-apartheid society. So since last night, you know, I kind of had a successful, well-received rally speech. So maybe today we should more have a conversation. So, you know, I'd like to, like the chairperson is doing, to invite you maybe to come with challenges, questions, criticisms, and feel free to advise because, you know, for example, certainly we don't have, you know, left organizations as big as, say, the Socialist Alternative in South Africa. So, you know, there is lots of things we can learn. Comrade Zodwa was talking about our local organization, the Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. Yeah, it's an organization, it's a community-based organization. It's mostly grannies, you know. Yeah, but, you know, we do political work, you know. We have weekly meetings, we discuss politics, and our constitution, we adopted socialism as our vision. It's the same with the anti-privatization forum. But certainly, you know, this is not like a socialist organization, you know. Yeah, so in fact, I think we maybe as socialists, maybe spending too much time building these community organizations, which are important, but maybe neglecting to build revolutionary socialist groups. So I'm just saying, you know, those are some of the things I'm learning. Okay, I will focus on the mood of the working class, on the mood of the working class, because that's the force which, you know, can help us get change. So I look at, like Zodwa, a bit on the condition which influences the working class consciousness. And then I will look briefly at what needs to be done. Okay. Okay. One of the problems in South Africa, you know, there is a political debate, but it's not enough. And when it happens mostly, you know, in radio talk shows and, you know, usually is the middle class, and it's conducted in English. Although you do get, such conversations on radio in Zulu, Sotho, and so on and so forth. But my own perception is that ordinary people are kind of left out of political debates, or they don't have a way of influencing, you know, public debate. So, in fact, I think there is a kind of thing that the leaders, they lead, they think, and sometimes they even act on behalf of the rank and file. So, for example, when we got our independence in 1994, there was a sense that everyone must now, you know, stop struggling, fold our arms, and wait for the Messiah, Mandela, you know, to deliver. Yeah. And indeed, in South Africa, like I said last night, there's a lot of uprisings, riots, protest action all over the country, albeit isolated. And the demand is for delivery. That's how people put it. That's just the word, the English word, delivery. We want delivery. So what they mean, they want houses, they want roads, and so on and so forth. But I would say that it's a good thing, but it also gives you an idea that someone must bring something to us. Yeah, yeah. So it's a kind of critique of that notion of delivery. So there isn't a notion of, in the idea of delivery, the concept delivery, there is not the idea of taking matters into your own hands. Yeah. As we all know, you know, like Trotsky said, you know, the working class has to interfere, you know, with history. It has to disrupt the plans of the bourgeoisie to change things to suit its needs. But you do get, you know, situations like earlier this year, a community took over some houses. So there's like occupying houses. So there was a government project. They built some houses. I think they were low to middle income houses, housing scheme. So a group of people who live around Cape Town, you know, in shacks, having waited for 14 years for housing delivery, just decided no. So they moved in. So they stayed there for a month, and then ultimately they were kind of kicked out, you know, violently, yeah, by the police. And then, of course, against the notion of waiting for delivery, as Comrade Zodwa has said, you do get actions like connecting yourself. So I'm just saying, you know, in general, people are calling for delivery, but you do get pockets of working class kind of taking matters into their own hands. And I would say not enough of that is happening. Yeah. And when it does happen, often the state, the police, they respond, you know, with an iron fist. Yeah. Okay. And also related to this delivery idea is the idea that if the government doesn't deliver, you know, we must change the president. This is what has happened now. With all the strikes which happened last year and the year before, with all the uprisings and riots, protest actions in 1 year was officially put at 10,000 protest actions a year. And most of these protest actions, they are legal protest actions. You apply for a march, you know, things like that. So they, you know, so they're not counting the illegal ones, you know, where people just walk out and fight. Yeah. Okay, they might be, you know, legal, but often they are violent because they'll go and bend down the local councillor's house, you know, block the road, things like that. Yeah. But, you know, as a response to that turmoil, the idea from the Communist Party leadership, from COSATU, was, let's change Thabo Mbeki, the man, and put Jacob Zuma. They were saying, Mbeki and his clique, you know, are implementing a capitalist agenda, rather than saying the African National Congress, you know, is pushing a capitalist line. So, you know, they're not even saying change the government. They're not saying replace the ANC with maybe a mass workers party. Yeah, so they're saying just change the driver, but the car is fine. And in fact, it's going the right direction. And even the speed is fine. Okay, now, but now, but all that was happening because of these strikes, this turmoil. Now, the strikes which we're seeing, it's a strike wave. Today, for example, the recent strike wave, we've lost more, I don't know what it's called, you know, hours at work, you know, loss, yeah. More than we lost, or more than the bosses lost during the height of the uprising in 85 to 87. Wow. So that's what's happening. And the reason, okay, there are many strikes, but also I think the reason is because these strikes tend to take long. Yeah, I think the security strike, I think it was 3 months. The cleaner strike, 2 months. The big public sector strike took a whole month. Yeah. And, you know, the public service, all the 17 unions mobilized. So, you know, it was hundreds of thousands of workers on strike. So that explains, you know, why, you know, strike hours are so much. Also, these strikes are very bitter. And often they are violent. So the most violent, which, you know, is not surprising, was the security worker strike. You know, there are security, they've got guards. Okay, they are workers, but you know the thinking. So, unfortunately, 26 workers lost their lives. Yeah, yeah. And, okay, some, you know, I think it's the police, agent provocateurs, but others were killed by fellow workers for scabbing and so on. And also, why the strikes are taking long, I think workers are desperate. Their backs are against the wall. So if they don't win, they know they are finished. Because the cost of living is rising. Okay? Yeah. The policy of privatization means the social wage, you know, like cheap water, cheap electricity, is being eaten away. So people must find money for electricity, money for water, and so on and so forth. Okay. Also, each worker who works is supporting more and more people because unemployment stands at about 40%. Yeah. And remember also, I think everywhere, you know, workers will take care of their families, but also, you know, it's an African context. So you must not only take care of your son or daughter, but also your auntie, your cousin. So that's the way it is, yeah. Okay. And also what's happening is that the bosses are making a lot of profit in South Africa. You know, the share of bosses' profit keeps on increasing. Okay, it keeps on increasing. Also, the ANC government, you know, has reduced their company tax from something like 48% when they took over to about 20%. So that's what's happening. Yeah. And most of the money, the profits, are being repatriated because, you know, companies have been allowed to delist and to list in the New York Stock Exchange, in the London Stock Exchange. Anglo-American, the biggest company, they made their money from the compound system, from the migrant labor system, from apartheid. But, you know, the dawn of democracy, they take all their money and put it in the London Stock Exchange. So, you know, there's a real increase between the rich and the poor. The rich are getting richer and the workers are feeling it. Now, but someone is going to ask, why is it that people keep on voting for the ANC? Because it's true that in the last election, which was, I think, 2004, I think, the national election, the ANC increased its majority. So in parliament, in the National Assembly, the African National Congress, the party of Nelson Mandela, has 2/3 majority. Yeah. Okay. And it means they can change the constitution. which means they can declare South Africa a socialist state if they wanted to. Okay, that's our argument. Okay. But loyalty to ANC is still strong, yeah, although it's waning. You know, people complain about the ANC, they complain about corruption, they complain about the new black bourgeoisie. There's a lot of conspicuous consumption, you know, people driving nice cars. You elect someone today, like Zodwa, the next day, they move out into the northern suburbs. That's happening all the time, yeah. So people kind of resent that. But come election time, they vote ANC. Okay, there's many reasons. You know, people tend to be loyal to the party, which brought liberation, you know. But also there's things like, because there's no alternative, people say things like, if the ANC loses, the whites will come back. You know, that kind of thing, yeah. But it's true also that the number of people voting are decreasing. Yeah, so, you know, some left analysts showed in the last election that more working class people did not vote than voted ANC. Yeah, yeah, okay. Okay, but so this shows that for some working class people, it's ANC or nothing. Yeah, if it's not the ANC, they won't participate in bourgeois elections. Okay, unfortunately, some on the left, I don't agree with them, they celebrate, you know, when people kind of boycott passively the elections. Yeah. Okay, our argument is that the guy who doesn't go vote ANC will also not come to the march or to the meeting. So, you know, we're not just celebrating that. We think it has to be interrogated. Okay, also, we have a problem where social movements like ours, the Landless People's Movement, they kind of adopt, some of them, an apolitical stance. You know, let's take Treatment Action Campaign, which had a good campaign fighting for treatment for people living with HIV. But to legitimize their campaign, you know, in the eyes of the government and the bourgeoisie, they will say, no, no, like their leader, I'm a loyal, card-carrying ANC member. All I want is treatment, you know, drugs for people living with AIDS. So in a way, that narrows down the struggle and depoliticizes it. And it doesn't show the link between the ANC's genocidal policy on HIV/AIDS to capitalism and so on and so forth. Okay, also some left groups, they feel the time to discuss about an alternative, mass left alternative, is not yet here. Of course, the Southern Communist Party doesn't want anything, you know, let's vote ANC, you know, that's their idea. Okay, and also, because, okay, what's happening, the ANC also has been forced, because it's not creating jobs. You know, there is no money being invested in creating jobs. So they are now kind of extending the welfare system. We call them social grants. So you get a child grant, pension, you know, things like that. So that is quite taking a chunk of the budget. Although individually it's a pittance. You know, you get for one child, I think you get 200 rands. That's nothing, you know. Yeah. Okay, but you know, that helps because research shows that 200 rand to a very poor family makes a bit of a difference. Yeah, so there's also that. And often when the ANC campaigns, you know, they'll say to people, if you don't vote ANC, we'll take away your social grant. Because people associate the child grant with Mandela. You know, it's Mandela's bequest or for the working class. Okay, there's another problem also where even when there are struggles, there is competitive individualism. So you'd find a community, you know, even the one I was talking about, which occupied some houses. Those houses, they were meant for another community. Okay? Yeah, it's not that you don't know which one. You know, the bureaucrats, they won't tell you. Yeah, so you'll find people fighting not for houses for all, but houses for my community. Yeah. Even these great strikes, you'll find that each union, not even each union, each group of workers, like we had this big strike, ShopRite Checkers, it's a supermarket chain, the workers were on strike. Their union is SACAU, Commercial and Catering Workers Union. It's part of COSATU, you know, the Union Federation. But every day we could see, you know, transport workers delivering goods for ShopRite. And they're all under COSATU. So there is no idea or notion or attempt to build solidarity by getting the truckers, you know, to do blacking action. So there is that sense of my struggle. Okay, also, yeah. Now, I just want to talk about workers' economic outlook. Okay, unionization is not great. I think it's 30%, you know, or so. But, you know, also there is many workers are casually employed. Although this strike in the retail sector was led by casual workers for a change. United with permanent. Now, unionization, the leaders of COSATU, they have been criticized by workers because they are seen as paying too much attention to removing Mbeki and putting Zuma rather than building struggles, building strikes. And in fact, before this strike wave, there was beginning to be an anti-union sentiment among ordinary workers. You know, because when the ANC took over, we lost more than 1 million jobs because of privatization, because of trade liberalization, you know, goods coming in and so on and so forth. So people were starting to say, hey, many of our members are former shop stewards who are now unemployed. Yeah. So in a way, the credibility of the unions was saved by the strike wave. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, there was now a danger of people being anti-union. Ah, these bureaucrats, they just want to fill their pockets and so on and so forth. Workers joining private legal advisors who will come in and help you. Okay, also, because of the failure of the union leadership to lead struggle seriously, okay, am I giving 20 minutes?
It's going to be 20 minutes.
So how much?
5 minutes,
okay, sure. Okay. So some left commentators, especially in the social movements, because the independent left, you know, was kind of kicked out of the unions. I myself, I was working for a COSATU union, Transport in General. They expelled me twice, you know. Okay, I'm not the only one, there are many, you know. I was also expelled by the ANC, so you can see. So the independent left has been instrumental and leading in forming these social movements fighting for single issues. Yeah, but some of them now came with a theory that COSATU actually is a labor aristocracy, you know. Yeah, and COSATU is part of the bourgeois state. So COSATU is the enemy, which, you know, is a dangerous idea. Also, the bosses set out in South Africa to co-opt working class leadership. Okay, many, you know, like the leader of COSATU, Mbazi Mashilowa, Sam Shilowa, he was the general secretary. He became premier of Gauteng province. You know, he had been against GIE, the macroeconomic policy. Now he's implementing GIE. You know, that's what happened. I told you about Cyril Ramaphosa. You know, he was leading the mine workers. He's now a mine owner. So, but also at a lower level, shop stewards are given managerial positions. Yeah, so you find that, especially in local government, members of one of the more militant COSATU affiliates, the South African Municipal Workers Union, the shop steward is also the manager. Yeah. And unfortunately, the union got confused because when these people were kind of co-opted or promoted, the bosses said, they must no longer be shop steward. And then the union said, no, we're fighting for the right of managers to be shop steward. So, you know, it's mad, you know. yeah. Okay, I'm sure, you know, those shop stewards, they were leading that campaign, yeah. Okay, yeah, so also, although COSATU has got nice internationalist views, You know, I'll just go into it briefly now. But they support a government campaign called Proudly South Africa. You know, so for example, in one congress, they discovered that all the delegates were wearing caps, red caps, made in China. So they were all collected and banned in front of, you know, we don't want these products from China. So there's a bit of, I don't know what it's called, yellow bashing. Yeah. Okay, but the idea there is that we must unite with our bosses, help them to make profit, and then we'll benefit. In fact, it's more than that, you know. We can only benefit if our bosses make a profit. Yeah, so that's the problem. Okay, but, you know, COSATU's constitution still says socialism. And like I say, you know, the hegemonic bloc is the ANC, Communist Party, COSATU Alliance. Indeed, when Thabo Mbeki was under attack from, COSATU recently, he was writing long tracts quoting Karl Marx, you know, to prove why, you know, he's still on the left track, can you see? So what I mean is, in South Africa, socialism, communism is not something, is not a swear word, it's not a dirty word. People still talk about socialism, you know, in a positive way, the communist, yeah. In fact, many activists, many comrades who get disillusioned with the ANC's neoliberal, pro-capitalist policies, they end up in the South African Communist Party. So it has been growing a bit, in the past few years or past months. But COSATU, like recently, had an action in support of Zimbabwe, Swaziland, Kenya, you know. A few years ago, they had a blockade on Swaziland because they want to pull down the monarchy. But the contradiction is that Zuma said when he took over in the ANC, he's now the president of the ANC, although not yet of the country, he said he will continue with the policy of quiet diplomacy. So there's a bit of a contradiction there. Certainly, COSATU is part of the World Social Forum, you know, the anti-capitalist, anti-globalization movement. Although the contradiction there is that we, as social movements, we've got a national structure called the Social Movements Indaba. So what would happen is that we'd meet COSATU leaders in Porto Alegre at the World Social Forum. But when we go home, you know, we kind of part our ways. I remember the deputy, Begin Chalinchali, when we were there, great friend of mine, take each other's numbers. But when we get back home, when I phone him, I never get to find him. Yeah. But unfortunately, also, like I've said, some left intellectuals, some social movements do adopt a sectarian position. And they say, you know, the social movements in Daba does not need COSATU. So, you know, it goes both ways. Yeah, and then I just want to 1 minute on social attitudes. Okay, we've got a problem of re-emerging racism among Afrikaners. Also, we've got a problem of xenophobia, people coming in from Zimbabwe, from Mozambique. You know, there are people say they're here to take our jobs. They give them names, makwerekwere. Can you see? Yeah. Although recently, the South African police attacked a church which houses refugees. So there was a public outcry. You know, ordinary people felt this was wrong. So, you know, workers, you know, they will change their mind. Okay, I could go on and on. Now, lastly, I just want to say that, there's other things, you know, sexism. A guy like Zuma is polygamous, you know, is a woman hater, basically. Also, there's a community called Khutsong. It's on the edge of the Gauteng province, where Johannesburg is. The richest province, and a province called the Northwest. For the past 3 years, there's a semi-insurrectionary situation there. These people, they were told they're going to be moved out of Gauteng, the rich province, into Northwest, the poor province. So they've been fighting, and they boycotted the last local government elections, like almost 100% boycott, the councillors who got elected, you know, I'm sure they voted for themselves. they don't live there because they burnt down their houses. So that is continuing, and some local SACP leaders are involved in that. Okay, so that's an important thing to watch. Now, lastly, I'll just go back to this thing that we've got all these struggles, these strikes, these riots, but, you know, there is no one trying to unite them. There is no one trying to have a common set of demands. There is no attempt to have one program, yeah, one platform. And in fact, there is no one trying to link those struggles to a struggle for power. So I think that is the major problem we face in South Africa today. So water is an issue, you know, people support. Electricity is an issue, people support. Housing is an issue. But no one wants to acknowledge that power is also an issue. Yeah, so power is an issue. Because as long as the enemy sits there in power, whatever victories we win, we'll have to defend again and again and again. So I would say that what we need in South Africa, maybe through a united front approach, working with ordinary ANC members, working with ordinary COSATU members, you know, is to raise the need for a mass left alternative. I would call that a mass revolutionary socialist party. Thank you very much.